We're talking with Chris DeRose about his book, In Your Face, which chronicles his efforts to protect animal welfare and to expose animal cruelty. Several stories in the book that I hope we get a chance to cover dealing with these universities, respectable universities, seemingly respectable medical research centers, hospitals, where this kind of research, vivisection, and horrible experiments are conducted on animals. When they get caught, they lie. They come out with bald-faced lies, tell the public, speak into TV cameras, and Chris DeRose has been there to call them on their lies. It's cost him plenty, though, including nearly getting killed when he was shot in the back, sent to jail a couple of times. We're going to get into those stories and more in our next segment here on Coast to Coast AM. Chris, you know, you mentioned about the judge's decision, what the judge said in that one case where you exposed that pet theft ring and what they were doing with the animals, and you were kind of on the edge of your seat wondering what this judge was going to do. Is he going to let him off with a slap on the wrist? And he let him have it. And, you know, I think basically when you're able to expose this stuff and explain to people what happens to animals, anybody who's had a pet, a dog or a cat, or loves animals or cares about them at all, can get outraged. The judge in that case, you know, I think he was probably a pet owner. And you've had in the book, you mentioned a couple of cops who, when they hear your story, they're ready to arrest you. When they hear your story, they say, if anyone had done that to my dog, I'd shoot him. Right? When you expose it, that's how they react.
Yeah. You know, the judge, he judged it. He didn't judge it from an emotional standpoint. He judged it strictly by the law. But when he gave his statements about the people, you could see that was coming from the heart. And the sentencing and all that came from the legal part of it. And but his statements, calling her the personification of evil and all the other statements, I was blown away by it. And because there were 16 charges against her, and they read them all first. Not guilty. Not guilty. I'm going, oh, please, just give me one conviction. Third one, not guilty. I was, oh. Then the next 13, guilty, 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 guilty. And I just couldn't believe it. I got numb. And then I realized when I was driving home, that I'm driving home, I'm free, I'm out on the highway here, and they're going to prison. And but it took almost 4 years to do it. But since then, I've learned a lot. I learned how to expedite these things, and but even another case that we had, C.C. Beard in Arkansas, that was a hard case. He was the biggest Class B dealer in the business, and we busted him. We put him out of business. We took his two farms, 500 acres, plus about $1 million. And that was worth about $1.2 million and about another $1 million in fines, and not counting his legal fees. So we totally put him out of business, and he was ruthless. And before that, it was another guy in Wisconsin, Urs Dabani. When we go after them, we get them. And it doesn't matter how big they are, how fearsome they try to appear to be. Like Stabani, they people thought we had four anonymous callers on it, four women, and they didn't want to testify or come out to the media because they were afraid, because he was a part of this Posse Comitatus, which is a far right wing group. And the whole family, the whole Stabani family, was part of this. And, once we busted Stabani, everybody wanted to come forward and speak out against them. But it took about a year to bust him. But we did it. We did it. And my tactics are sometimes not, what people want to see. But I'm not doing it for them. I'm doing it just to see how fast I could put a stop to this, because we sent an Asian couple in there, a Hmong couple, and they And there was a Hmong community nearby, and they ordered the dogs, the food and stuff like that. And he would pick out a dog and butcher it, shoot it in the head and butcher it. There was two places those dogs were going to go. They were going to be butchered for food, or and shot in the head, and or they were going to be sent to a laboratory and tortured in a laboratory. So I had them go in. No dogs were going to Disneyland. I assure you, no dogs were going to Disneyland. And this dog, it was a Springer Spaniel, got the lesser of the two evils. It got the bullet in the head. And we documented it, and we were able to put this guy out of business but because of that. But that was by public demand, public outrage, that this is going on in our country, that we're eating dog here in this country. And so that we were able to put him out of business, too. And but again, some people accused me of having that dog killed and all that, you know, because I had the couple go in there, pick, you know, they didn't even pick out the dog. Irv Stabani picked it out. And then he shot it and butchered it. And it was, and like I said, that dog was not going to go to Disneyland. It was not going to a good home. It would have either been killed for food or it would have been killed in a laboratory. All I did was document it and then put the bastard out of business. And and when I say he went down, he was the biggest at the time in 95. He was the biggest. And then C.C. Beard took over a lot of his route years later. And then I busted C.C. Beard in 2006.
It's you know, the scope of it, you know, even the ring of three people that you put out of business to start with, that how many hundreds and hundreds of animals that they dealt with, that they stole and had put to death. And you got these rings around the country, and it's all feeding into a system that is largely publicly funded. It's public money goes to these labs and universities that pay out the dough, that a bounty for animals. They don't want stray dogs. They want nice fluffy dogs and cats and things that they can experiment on. And you would go in to, as you detail in the book, you'd go in, you and your colleagues would find a way to document it. You get into the lab, you get photos, you get video, you have all the evidence ready to go, and then you spring it on them. And these universities would trot out PhDs. They'd speak to the cameras, accuse you of lying, accuse you of being terrorists. And then you release the evidence and catch them in a lie again. Tell me a little bit about that part of it.
Yeah, I mean, you hit it right on the head. And well, what we do is we get our evidence. We're very meticulous about putting all our evidence together. And we don't exaggerate anything. We don't have to, because there's so much there. There's so much. And then what we do is we get it to the proper authorities. When we did C.C. Beard, we took it to the U.S. Attorney's Office, never thinking that a U.S. attorney, the highest investigation organization in the land, in the United States, they can investigate the FBI. We didn't think that they would actually take the case, but it was so well done, the case, and so well documented and put together, that the guy sat and he was definitely not a vegetarian or a vegan. He was a big, big, robust guy, and he's from Arkansas. And he sat there and he was going through the pages, and he goes, How'd you get on this property to do this? I said, I trespassed 22 times. And get that out of the way, you know. And he's looking at it, and he finally closes the book, and he goes, anybody ever stole my dog like this? I'd shoot him dead. He said, I'll take the case. And that was it. I was numb. I just didn't even realize that he said that for about 10 more minutes. And they took the case, and they spent 3 years investigating it themselves, sending our undercover op inside over and over again. There was a documentary done on it called Dealing Dogs, and it got nominated for two Emmys. And but it was the first documentary, animal rights documentary ever done as well. So, what we do is we take it to the proper legal authority. And we were trying to, at first, we thought maybe the EPA would get involved, because we had there was a creek that ran through the C.C. Beard's property. And in the beginning of the creek, it was almost crystal clean. I won't get into all the numbers and stuff because it's too confusing. But as it comes out of the, passes through his property from all the dog manure and cat manure and everything, it was toxic. When we sent it to an unbiased laboratory, they said that they wouldn't put their finger in it because it was so toxic. And but we took it to the EPA, and the EPA wouldn't do anything about it. They sent it to the local authorities, which was in Arkansas, equivalent to the EPA, and that's a joke. I mean, that was a complete joke. That's a whole big story right there. But they didn't do anything about it, and they lied about it. Meanwhile, while they're lying about saying that they went into the trenches and they looked and all that, they didn't, because I was down there on the property and spying on them to make sure that they were doing their job. They thought I was still sitting back at the restaurant waiting for them, and I was up there set in place to see if they would do their job, and they never did their job, but they blatantly lied about it. And so, you know, the research facilities, they'll lie about it all the time, but we catch them, we document it, and we get them with their pants down. And there's, for about 10 years, it was really going after them and really making a difference. And then they started passing laws saying that we're terrorists, and the animal, the law that was passed in 2006, which was the Animal Enterprise Terrorist Act, and it makes anything that we do a terrorist act. You could be standing out in front of a fur store with a cardboard sign with your 90-year-old grandmother, and if that guy inside says you're impeding upon his money, his economic flow, you could be tried as a terrorist, the same as a person that flies an airplane into a building. And that was what we were being equivalent to, it has a chilling effect. It's called, and it really made a difference to a lot of investigators. Didn't want to take that kind of the risk, and organizations didn't want to take that risk because they could lose their 501c3 or go out of business. We still did it. We still did our investigations. We're challenging it. One day, they'll want to put us away, and that's when we'll challenge it in court, and we will prevail. And yeah, they know that, so that they're keeping it as it is, you know, as a law.
It's like these ag gag laws at the these states that pass laws that say if you take a picture of a meat processing plant, it's illegal. If you take pictures or video of cows in some feedlot, it's illegal. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And if anything, in Europe, they, in a few countries, they endorse it. They encourage it. And it's not illegal any place in Europe. You could walk in there full blasting with a camera held up to your eye and just shooting away. They can't do anything about it. And like I said, and there's a few countries there, and I think Austria is one of them, where they encourage you to do it. Because you're doing a service not only to the animals, but you're doing a service to the public, because this is contaminated meat. It's, but for us, we care about what it is for the animals. And so that's it. I mean, it's, but like you said, they're coming up with these ag gag, and there's like 17 states now that have it. There's they're getting ready to try to pass one in Canada, and they've already passed it in two of their states, and they're getting ready to pass it in another one. And from what I understand, it's going to pass, but we're fighting it. We're fighting everything differently too now. We're doing things legally with lawyers. We're doing things with lobbyists and PR. So you have to take it to that level to fight it and really make a difference at some point. You just can't be on the front lines and fight it and make a big splash and then nothing happens. You got to take it all the way.
Well,
and
you've taken it all the way. You've gone to jail a couple of times. You got shot. You got hit by a car. You want to tell any of those stories?
Sure. I mean, when I went to jail, I was in there three or four times. I can't even remember. I know three that I could count on. And one time I got 90 days in solitary confinement in L.A. County Jail, which is the worst jail and the biggest jail in the United States. And I got 45 days another time in a hole, which is even worse. And out of the 10,000 cells and inmates there, there's only six cells that are in the hole. And Richie Ramirez, the Night Stalker, was in there when I was in there. And then when I was in solitary confinement, I met Eric Menendez, the Menendez boys that killed their parents. So this is what they're putting us in for trespassing, and they're trying to break us. So instead of breaking us, we went on a hunger strike as well. And that cut our time in half to get the hell out of there. But we didn't eat anything, and they tried to force it on us and force me on it to eat, and I refused to. And they were going to feed me through my nose, which I didn't think was going to be very pleasant. So I said, well, you can't do that because, you know, I have all my mental faculties about me, as you see, and I physically still can hold my own. And I got down and did 10 one-handed push-ups, and I sat back down. And I said, if anybody in here could do one of those, you could stick whatever you want down my nose. But it was intimidating. It was. You're in a room that's sterile. There's a steel bunk in the middle of the room with an IV built into it. And that's where they give it to you, so to speak, if you're not cooperating, not going along with the program.
The guy who shot you had been somebody who used to work with you. He was a little bit unhinged.
Bill, he had a fatal attraction thing. He had gone out with a woman in my office, one of my secretary's assistants, and they broke up, didn't work out. Then she got a new boyfriend, and he threatened her. This went on for several years. And he threatened her and shot a gun, you know. And I don't want to say he was part of us, because he really wasn't. He was on the outskirts of the movement and the peripheral part of our organization, because I didn't trust him. There was something wrong with him. He was 6'4", 245-pound, 8-year-old boy mentally. So I just didn't have trust, and it was nice to have somebody, a big guy there, but I didn't feel right about him. So, and my instincts were right, because it turns out he flipped and went over. He wound up shooting me in the back, and he wound up becoming an informant for the FBI, that's documented. We got all the information and redacted stuff, records that he rolled over, but he never got close enough to me to make any serious allegations that would stick. But he sure made my life miserable. And even to this day, I've had five operations because of when he shot me and the problems that it caused me, and blood flow in my leg and all that stuff. So, it's just bringing back memories right now.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you do walk the walk. You once took a role for a film that was filming in the Philippines because you wanted to go there to photograph and document the dog meat trade. So you were committed even back when you were still working as an actor. We're talking with Chris DeRose about his book, In Your Face, Animal Activism. We're talking with Chris DeRose, actor turned animal activist, about his book, In Your Face, adventures and trials and tribulations he's had on behalf of animal welfare issues over the years. In a moment, we're going to get into the question of medical benefits. I mean, aren't these researchers saving lives by being cruel to animals, carving them up in labs. We're going to end that question and also get to the phones and take some calls from you in just a moment in our final segment of Coast to Coast AM. Chris, let's talk about the issue of medical benefits of this kind of animal research. That's the big argument, right? It's what the labs say, the universities say. We're saving lives here. It's necessary to carve up this dog or cat or chimp or whatever it is in order to save humans and human life being more valuable than animal life. What do you say?
Yeah, I find that very interesting. You know, they've been doing animal experimentation for over 300 years. And we can't even find a cure to a common cold. Just think about it. A common cold we can't find a cure to. And we're asking the same people to find a cure to these other diseases. You know, one who would not hesitate to vivisect an animal would not hesitate to lie about it. These people are the same people that lie. I'm not saying that warm medicine is bad. I'm not saying, listen, if I broke my arm in a motorcycle accident or something, I'm not going to go to a chiropractor. I'm going to go to a surgeon or a hospital emergency room and have them take care of it. You know, there are places and times for the certain medical intervention, but they make it sound like that they're going to find a cure to everything. You know, your muscular dystrophy with Jerry Lewis telephone, there was nothing more bigger farce than that. And those poor kids couldn't even get a, we had some kids that were coming to us with their parents and that couldn't even get a wheelchair, an electric wheelchair, because they had three kids and it was only two parents. And they couldn't even get the electric wheelchair out of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. So, you know, all these here magic bullets, the cure just around the corner and all this stuff. I tell people, don't listen to me. I think it's wrong. I just think it's morally and ethically just plain bad. And it's scientifically, I think it's unscientific, and fiscally it's unsound because it will only help a few people. So I say, don't believe me. I have an agenda here, you know, just because I think it's wrong. That in itself is, but question it yourself. And if you question it, you're going to come up, same as me. I'm a person that just wasn't an animal person, but I just found out what they were doing was absolutely wrong. And not only are the animals paying for it, but people are paying for it with their lives, their children's lives. Because I'm so tired of hearing this, it's either your dog or your child. Well, if you keep doing it on the dog, it's going to be the child next, because it doesn't extrapolate over from animals to human beings. And we need to get smart, get wise. And I think, you know, I think people now are really questioning stuff more, and I'm glad to hear that. And you go to a doctor, just because he's got a white coat and a stethoscope around his neck doesn't mean he's God. And it doesn't mean he knows everything. It's up to you. You know your body better than anybody, and you need to question it. So,
well, I guess I would ask, are there alternatives to the animal testing and carving up dogs and cats?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There's in vitro testing. There's computer models. There's cadaver studies. There are many, many studies that are much more effective, efficient, because it's a science. Doing this stuff with animals, because they differ within themselves, and they differ from human beings. You know, it's like if you and I were twin brothers, I might be allergic to penicillin and might help you. It could kill me and cure you. So
It just seems like some of the cruelty that is built into it is unnecessary. Even if there are cases where animal testing can somehow save lives, it doesn't have to be so cruel. You don't have to carve up dogs without anesthetic of any kind or cut out their vocal cords so you don't hear them scream. It's like factory farming, too. All right, you want to eat meat. There are ways to raise animals in a humane way. You don't have to pack 500 pigs into one filthy pen or cram all these chickens into these terrible coops. Remember the mess that was made about eggs. They The animal welfare people who changed the law in California, and the egg producers predicted doom and gloom if they're forced to give chickens a little bit of room so they can live. And it didn't happen. You know, so I think there are ways you can certainly be less cruel, but these things have cruelty built into the model.
Yeah, and as far as research goes, you know, the thing is, it doesn't work. It really just does not work. And I could say that blatantly because there's an organization, Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, PCRM, and they have thousands of physicians, thousands now, who are against animal experimentation and research because they say it does not work. And at one time back in the early 70s, Hans Reusch wrote a book called 1001 Scientists Against Vivisection. And even back then, there were a number of people who really opposed it because it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. It's big business, and it's big business as usual. And even when that Malamute died in my arms, and I told you, 39 years before they were doing the experiment on ulceration, this is 40 years later, they're still doing the ulceration test on those animals. And it hasn't changed, other than nothing has changed about it, not even the results, obviously. So it's a long battle. It's a battle. It's a way of life that we need to start to adapt and learn not to eat animals, not to buy things that are tested on animals, and fight the big corporations. The AMA is controlled by the farmers, big pharma, and the big pharma is controlled and owned by the multinational petrochemical corporations that run the world. This is what we're up against. So you wonder how they have so much power and so much clout where they can put laws through in the middle of the night just to stop us from doing what we're doing. We're having results going on inside research facilities in our investigations. They come up with a law in the middle of the night saying that it's illegal to take information out of a laboratory. So we have it where we get copies of the stuff and copies of videos, and then they come up with another law saying it's illegal to have copies and make copies of it. And then, like I said before, they come up with the Animal Enterprise Terrorist Act. They're trying to, but you know, it's important that we don't stop. We don't stop. And no matter what they throw at you, it's you got to be able to circumvent it. And it's just like martial arts. Somebody throws a punch, you move out of the way, you counter it using their momentum, and you strike. And it's the same thing here. And that's how I look at it. And I deal with it, especially the investigations. I deal with the investigations that way. You know, going after them and go right to the core of the problem and expose them. I ask myself, if I'm a researcher and I'm the head researcher of this facility, whatever facility it may be, what is it I don't want? And then I listen to myself. I say, I don't want to be exposed. I don't want this to get out there. And then that's my job, to go ahead and expose them.
Let's take some calls. First-time caller, Michael in Woodland, California. Hi, Michael. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Fascinating show. Finally motivated me to actually call for the first time any talk show. I never thought I would. But you've got a very brave guest on. He's putting his life on the line, it sounds like, and sounds like the perfect person to do it. The reason I'm calling is maybe I can put my 2 cents worth in. It was interesting he mentioned PCRM, the Physicians Committee, a fantastic group. And I'm retired now, and I only, you know, was able to give them a little money, but I get their mailers, and they do a lot of legal work with some high-powered lawyers trying to stop some of the issues that your guest is talking about in labs and various places. With vivisection and research. Well, my little 2 cents worth is that I grew up in, I lived in Michigan for a while, and as a kid, junior high, and I was quite, as most of the kids in the 60s were, I was quite the hunter killer of things, and that was just for fun to see if I could hit them. And boy, I think I might have. Well, anyway, there were a lot of creatures, and so I didn't develop a conscience until one of them didn't die, and I had to just keep shooting. Anyway, what I'm getting at is that I was interested in monkeys and chimps and primates as a young guy, and so I wrote a letter to the National Primate Center, one of the largest ones of the six in the U.S. is in Davis, California, which is right next door to my woodland locale. And I was accepted later on when we moved out to California. Well, that surprised me, but it was fascinating, and I didn't, you know, I still wasn't developing any conscience about what I got involved in. I was, I'll try to shorten this down. I worked for a pretty dictatorial, scientist manager of that primate center in 65. I was 15, the first high school kid they ever hired. They probably didn't do it again. But I got assigned to the anatomy and the anatomy lab / morgue, because every morning when I came in, there were piles anywhere from 10 to 15, mostly rhesus, but some exotics like lemurs and an occasional chimp. And they're in black bags, and a lot of them are still warm. And my job was to, working with a very kindly expat Russian-German technician who only emotion he showed about the work that we got to see was when the babies came in, baby bodies, monkeys, and he called them babelis. He had a Russian accent. Well, anyway, so I saw some stuff. Still didn't develop any big conscience about it. Thought I was going to be a biologist or scientist of some sort. And then I did graduate with a degree from UC Davis.
Michael, we're going to have to move on because you saw it with your own eyes. I'm not surprised. I mean, that kind of harvest, it obviously stayed with you after all these years. Chris, do you want to comment about that? You ever had any dealings with UC Davis?
Except that county is the last county in the United States and in California. There's 58 counties that still allows pound seizure, which is the animals go from the pound to research facilities. So they're not a shiny bright. They got a really dark history. And they continue to have it. And we've eliminated and stopped in 57 counties. It's the only county in California where, because it's UC Davis, and I've been in their primate facility place many years ago, as well as many other primate facility places. And it's pretty horrendous. And the fact that these animals don't have any social interaction with one another, or they don't have any toys or anything to play with. Sometimes they got an old TV that's on in there, and that's about it. That's their social enjoyment. This gentleman that's speaking is absolutely accurate about it, and it's sad. It's sad that, you know, and I commend him for not taking it any further and becoming a vivisector and getting away from it. Obviously, it's something that bothered him enough to make this call. And we need more people like that. We really need more people like that.
That's a publicly funded university, UC Davis, publicly funded research on these animals. Wildcard line, Laura in New York. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Chris, I just wanted to thank you for the work that you do very, very much. I thank you, because it's great work. I've been eating the way you do for 44 years now. I also do animal rescue for the last 30 years, and you probably know everything I'm going to say, but I just want to address it to the audience, let the audience know there are anti-vivisection societies that people can donate to. They're doing a lot of work to take the monkeys and the chimps out of the labs, And also, I want people to know that the foie gras industry is really horrendous also, and also mm-hmm. the lobster industry are really horrendous. The harm that gets done to these animals are boiled alive, and to let people know to have a little bit more consciousness about the choices they make, about what they eat. And then also, for health reasons, what's becoming really popular is the paleo diet and the keto diet. And that's all about eating meat, meat, meat. And it's just all really disgusting. And I just want to have...
Laura, thank you for the call. We're running out of time. So I thank you for the... I'm going to let Chris comment on that. The diet part, for example.
Well, she's absolutely right. And we're learning now that... obesity with young people in this country is out of control. I mean, you hear different statistics. Anywhere if I hear from 58 to 90% of the kids are going to be fat or obese. And that's disgusting. At one time, and nowadays, a kid in the class that's thin is the one that stands out. If he's athletic or he's thin. Whereas one time, if it was a kid in the school that was overweight, now it's the norm. It's the norm, and it's dangerous and it's unhealthy. So this is why these new different kind of alternative meats that are coming out are the way to go. It doesn't have the hormones in there. It doesn't have the antibiotics. It's healthier for the kids. You know, you got to watch. You still got to watch how much you're eating because it's still, comfort food. But it's far better than eating meat and any kind of products that have been injected with hormones. And this is why young girls are developing faster than they normally would have back in the time when I was a kid. So it's all what they're putting into the animals, and it's concentrated. And then we take this and we feed it to the kids at lunch in schools. We're setting up these kids to become big dollar signs for the biomedical research community and for the research, big pharma industry, because they're going to be obese. They're going to be fat. But the tide is starting to change on that. People are becoming aware of it. Finally, they're becoming aware of it.
Chris
DeRose,
really
starting to take action.
I thank you for your work. I thank you for being here. If you get arrested or if you get hit with one of these gag laws and need some help, I hope you'll come back here. In Your Face is the name of the book. Thanks for joining us. Thanks also to my earlier guest, Tom Dongo. And to my colleagues there at Coast to Coast, Michael Cosio, Donna Walker, our webmaster Greg Bishop, Dan Galante, and producer Chris Boros. I'm George Knapp. Good night, everyone.